It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Wednesday's edition, the special schedule release day of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. John Schmelk, Lance Ometa with you. The phone number is 973-667-1960. We'll take your calls early and often. The NFL schedule gets released tonight on a special on NFL Network. So, guys, we don't know who the schedule is going to be in terms of team order. We don't know. We do know the opponents. Week one was announced this morning. The Giants will open the season on Sunday, hosting the Denver Broncos. So we'll talk about the opponents, a little bit about that, and then we'll squeeze in a ton of your calls at 973-667-1960. Mr. Meadow, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
We are doing well here, too. So let's start, I guess, with what we do know. The Giants will open up against Denver on the first Sunday of the regular season, which is that first Sunday after Labor Day, 4:25, which means it's the national game on Fox, which is a big national window. I guess we don't quite know who the quarterback for Denver is going to be. It looks like it's going to be Drew Lock, but
could be Teddy Bridgewater.
Could be Teddy Bridgewater, yeah. Or maybe it's somebody that's on the roster yet, depending on all these rumors that are going on. So that's going to be, and frankly, I'm happy that it's not a division game. I don't like getting those division games, whether it's Dallas or anybody else, in that first week, because I feel like those games are so important. In week one, everyone's just starting to kind of get into things a little bit. I like to have those a little bit later in the year, so I'm happy that first week is not a division game.
Yeah, I'm always in favor of having the divisional games start no earlier than pretty much week five. I say you get the first quarter of the season in the books, you get acclimated to your new teammates, and then you start playing your divisional games. I know that usually never comes to fruition, but I think as much as you could delay it as possible, the better it is for just the state of the division. And the fact that the Giants are not playing the Cowboys for the second straight year is quite amazing. It's quite the drought that we're going to experience here now. The fact that we're going two straight seasons where it's not Dallas and the Giants opening up the season. I don't know what the schedule makers were thinking here in terms of denying us the privilege of getting that game.
Well, diversity, but the Cowboys did not escape a primetime game. So they're starting on Thursday night against the World Championship Buccaneers. Hey, Dan Quinn, here's your new defense. Good luck against Tom Brady. Have fun with that. I'm sure they're thrilled about that opening week matchup for them. You know, and the thing about Denver, Lance, we talked about it last year, how the beginning of the schedule featured some really good defensive teams last season. You had Pittsburgh, Chicago, L.A., and San Francisco. And Denver, they add Patrick Surtain in the draft. They added Darby and Fuller as free agents at cornerback. We know about their defensive front. Chubb's a really good pass rusher off the edge. The Broncos have a darn good defense, so this is going to be a real challenge right off the bat for what's going to be a Giants offense with Daniel Jones returning for his third season and a bunch of new weapons around him.
Well, and then on top of that, this is going to be year three under Vic Fangio. So there's a lot more familiarity with the group that at least started with Fangio, and Von Miller's coming back after missing all of last season due to an ankle injury. Denver has one of the best secondaries in the NFL in terms of proven talent. You're talking about Justin Simmons, who was given the franchise tag at the safety position. They just added Kyle Fuller, who you mentioned, who was with Vic Fangio, by the way, in Chicago. Bryce Callahan also was with him in Chicago. Unfortunately, he's dealt with some injuries. Maybe this is the first season where he finally could stay on the field. Darby is a veteran who's also familiar with a lot of Giants personnel because he played in the NFC East for a number of seasons. And then you mix in the rookie Patrick Surtain. So I would put this Denver secondary up against just about any other unit in the National Football League. And then the addition of Von Miller. Yeah, this is a very tough task in terms of solving a Denver defense that, to me, was just plagued by injuries last season. And the same thing with their offense. Few of their young wide receivers didn't play every single game. Clearly, they didn't have stability under center. There's not much to take away from a team in how it performed last season when so much has changed over the course of the offseason. I think Denver is probably the poster child of that situation.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you can make an argument for why Denver is going to go 6-10 this year. You can argue why Denver is going to go, why they might go 6-11 this year. And you could also make an argument why they might go like 9-8 this year. It could go either way, and a lot of it's going to depend on the quarterback. And as we talk about these opponents, it is important to note that we're discussing these opponents in May, and a lot can change between May and whenever the Giants play these teams. I always go back A few years ago when we were talking about a really tough game middle of the year against the Packers, and it was a big game, and it was like a three-game stretch where they put a lot of good teams, and Aaron Rodgers broke his clavicle that year and ended up being Scott Tolzien. That was the quarterback for the Packers. So it's always, Lance, as much as, you know, who you face, but also when you face them, that has a big impact. Like last year, if the Giants would have played the Bengals when Joe Burrow was healthy, that game would have been a lot different than when Joe Burrow was not healthy, and instead you had, Finley, I think, was their core starting quarterback for that game, right? And that's a much easier task. So a lot of this has to do with timing.
Yeah, 100%. And there's so much that's unknown in terms of what's going to happen over the first few weeks of the season, which is going to obviously impact the state of a team come week 5 and week 6. Also, look at the Giants situation. Who would have known that Daniel Jones was going to suffer multiple injuries and miss a few games last season? And that clearly changed, I'm sure, Jason Garrett's game plan or what he had anticipated going up against the Seattle Seahawks or the Cleveland Browns. And if we would have had conversations about both of those teams around this time last year, it was a very different conversation. So I really don't put a whole lot into speculating about what's going to happen 8 weeks into the season. It's one thing to say, okay, hey, the first four games present somewhat of a challenge because of the state of the defense, or you're just unsure of what your own offense is going to be beyond the first quarter of the season. There's really not much to take away other than pencil it, circle the date, and know that the Giants are going to have a football game, period.
Yep, all you can do. So let's talk about some of the opponents. And folks, this is a unique year. It's the first game, the league is going to 18 weeks, so 17 games. So you will probably have, I got to look exactly when the dates are scheduled, but you're going to have one game in that second week of January, which is going to be weird, which you don't usually have every given season. So there'll be two January games. For fans that haven't paid attention, the Giants will play, of course, their 6 games against their NFC East opponents, half at home, half on the road. They play 4 games against the NFC South. They will host the Falcons and the Panthers. They will visit New Orleans and Tampa Bay. Their AFC division they're facing is the AFC West. They will host the Broncos, who we talked about already, and the Raiders. They will travel to L.A. to face the Chargers and to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Their record-determined games, in other words, the teams that finished in the same spot as they did in the two other NFC divisions, are the Rams, who will visit MetLife Stadium. And then you have the Bears, who the Giants will play in Chicago at some point. And then that bonus game is the one on the road against the team that finished in the same spot in the AFC East. That's their, you know, quote-unquote 17th game on the schedule, and that's going to be visiting the Miami Dolphins. So just very quickly, Lance, before we get to the calls, and we will take your calls for most of the show as we get ready for the schedule release, there's a lot of teams here where I think you say, boy, we don't really know what this group's going to be yet, right? You know, I think two of the teams that jump out to me are the Panthers, who continue to add a lot of young pieces. They took a flyer on Sam Darnold, trying to right the ship with him. We talked about Denver, so I'm not going to include him in this conversation. And then the other team that I think we have a lot of questions about are the Bears, just because we don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be. That's going to be one of those games, Lance, where when you face them is going to be very important, depending on who the quarterback's going to be. And then the other team, heck, I'll throw a third team in there, is the Saints, right? It's the first time the Giants will be facing the Saints without Drew Brees in like 15 years. So what is that team going to look like with Jameis Winston there? There's a lot of questions about, you know, how well he's going to play there, getting that starting spot back with Taysom Hill there in the mix too. So those are three teams that I think, outside of the division teams, and I think Washington and Philly can throw in this mix too because they have new quarterbacks, that you just don't know a lot about, and you can see those teams swinging in any direction in terms of how good they're going to be this year.
Yeah, I would also throw the Miami Dolphins out there too, given the fact that they alternated quarterbacks last season.
Good point.
So, you know, when do you play Miami? How comfortable is Tua in that spot? They also added some talent on both sides of the field, specifically on the offensive side of the field, some changes on the offensive line. So Miami's a bit of a wild card team, and that's why you could say there's really pros and cons for some of the teams we just talked about in terms of when you play them, because you could argue, well, maybe it's better to play them a little bit later on in the season. You have a little bit more film on them, especially if it's a team with a new quarterback. Do you want to see Sam Darnold running that Carolina offense for a few games before you play him? I would say there's an added benefit to that. Or if you play them earlier in the season, it's a little bit of the unknown because he's getting used to the new personnel. He's getting used to the new coaching staff. Maybe they all of a sudden get more and more comfortable by the time you meet them and start showcasing different facets of their playbook. So I really think there's pros and cons to all of those teams that we named. But this is the intrigue of the NFL schedule every single year. There's so much change in the offseason that what happened last year, you can only take so much away, which is another reason why strength of schedule is completely irrelevant because it's all based on how these teams fared last season. And we already talked about four opponents that the Giants are going up against, and there's going to be a lot more where you either change the quarterback, you change the coach, you change the scheme, and that means that, well, great. So they fared decently against these teams last year. They struggled against those teams, and now they look like a completely different team. So there's, once again, only so much to me that you could take away from that 2020 season.
Yeah, Lance, I agree 100%, no question about it. And then there are teams where I think, unless, of course, there's an injury, which you don't know, but you kind of know that these are going to be really tough games. Like, the Rams are a win-now team, right? When you trade two first-round picks plus your starting quarterback to upgrade that position, this is a win-now team. We know they have a very good defense. Now they have Matthew Stafford. They're well-coached on offense with Sean McVay. So, and of course, they're well-coached on defense as well. So that's going to be a tough game at MetLife Stadium that the Giants are going to have to deal with. You know, playing on the road against Tampa Bay and Kansas City is going to be extremely tough. Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady, the two teams in the Super Bowl. I don't think I have to say much more than that. And then you think the game on the road against the Chargers is going to be really tough. You know, if their defense is healthy, we talk about guys like Derwin James, you know, Joey Bosa. You think Justin Herbert in a second year is going to take a big step, but they have a new coaching staff there too. So that to me is also a very fun game, and it could be a very difficult game in LA. And really, you look at those NFC South and AFC West teams, Lance, there are no soft landing spots here. I mean, the Giants, they get the Falcons and the Panthers, who are both selecting in the top eight in the draft, but the Falcons with Matt Ryan and all those weapons on offense, they're going to score. We'll see what their defense is like. And then you have the Panthers, who just played in so many close games last year that they couldn't win. And you'll see if they can win some of those closer games with a different quarterback. So, you know, you go every year and you think, all right, this might be a soft landing spot. There's really no games you circle here on this schedule where you're like, all right, I'm pretty sure that's going to be one of the worst teams in the league. You just don't see that in the schedule, and you're guaranteed three really tough games, barring injuries, with the Rams, Chiefs, and, of course, the Super Bowl champion Bucks.
Well, you go back to last season also. All you have to do is look at the Jets situation, and everybody was talking about how, oh, they're sitting pretty, they got a challenging schedule, and then they wind up beating the Raiders because of, once again, a gutsy call. We can leave it at that. And then the Rams, they went into LA and they beat a Rams team, which was a true contender in the NFC. So that's another reason why, to me, it really doesn't make any difference what people are speculating about how teams are going to fare heading into the season, because you may get hurt, they may get more comfortable by the time you meet them, and all of a sudden it's a much more challenging game. That's why timing is everything in the NFL. I think the common theme between the AFC West and the NFC South is, you know, for the most part, all of these opponents have veteran quarterbacks or a quarterback who is on the rise. So therefore, the onus is going to be on your offense, whether or not you can match firepower with them. And then it's sort of a toss-up in terms of whose defense is in pretty good shape. But yeah, there is no picnic in the AFC West. Kansas City has been one of the most consistent teams. Denver has had a really good defense since Fangio took over. Okay, you could say there's some question marks about the offense. The Chargers, I'd be stunned if Herbert takes an immense step back. I think you got to be really encouraged. I know he's got a new offense, but he's still got some familiarity around him, and they really invested in that offensive line this year. So kudos to the Chargers for saying, hey, we got a guy coming off Offensive Rookie of the Year honors. Now we're going to make sure we protect him. Once again, all of the pieces, at least on paper in the offseason, are there for him to thrive. And then Las Vegas, once again, another team with Gruden and his creativity, you know they could score. The million-dollar question is, can they stop anybody? So you go into that division saying, hey, we're going to have to put points on the board because this could very well easily be a shootout. As far as the NFC South is concerned, Matt Ryan, Sam Darnold, Tom Brady, and whether it's Jameis or Taysom Hill, you at least have a quarterback that has some experience because Breeze got hurt over the last few years. So those two guys have run Sean Payton's offense, and they have some experience with other teams, such as Jameis. So once again, the pressure is going to be on your offense. The question is for all of these teams, what do we make of their defense, with the exception of Tampa Bay, which we know is bringing back pretty much the entire core. So it turns back to what we've been talking about all of last season. Can Daniel Jones and that offense consistently score points? Because, you know, 17.5 points per game is just not going to cut it this year.
Yeah, and look, this is the last thing I say. Two things. One, you look for the quarterbacks, right? That's often sometimes what's going to determine what are the easier spots and, you know, what are the tougher spots here on the schedule. You know, Carolina's got a questionable quarterback situation. Denver has a questionable quarterback situation. Philadelphia has a questionable quarterback situation. The Bears, just because they drafted somebody, you don't know how good Justin Fields is going to be. If he beats out Andy Dalton, who knows? That's a quarterback situation you're not positive about. The Dolphins, you know, is Tua going to be great? He could be awesome. Maybe he's not. That's a situation. So there are some quarterback spots where you say, all right, this might give us an advantage here, but you don't know. The other thing that I find interesting, Lance, is that this schedule swings a lot from offense to defense. You know, last year I thought it was a very tough schedule for the Giants offense. You just faced a lot of good defenses over the course of the year, including, you know, Washington in the division twice. You had those four games to start the year. And I went back. It was basically the best pass rushing, you know, group of teams that any team faced in the whole league. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. But this year you have some teams you're like, all right, Atlanta, Oakland, Dallas.
Or Las Vegas, yes.
Thank you. Las Vegas, Atlanta, Dallas. Those are teams where you're sitting there like, all right, you know what? We should be able to score on those teams, right? We should be able to, you know, run up some points. But then you have other teams like Denver and L.A., Chicago, Washington. Heck, throw the Bucks in there if you want. Miami, New Orleans had a really good defense last year where you're like, oh boy, that could be a real tough go. So this could be a real weird year, Lance, where you have a high-scoring game followed by a really low-scoring game, where you have some really good offensive teams, some really good defensive teams, and a couple in between.
Well, and that's why, to me, it still falls on the Giants' offense, because if you're scoring points, you at least feel as if you're keeping yourself in the game. But here's the other thing, just to piggyback off of your point about maybe some of the teams that are a bit questionable on defense. Remember, Atlanta and Dallas have both new coordinators. So with new coordinators means guys may be putting some of the players that are even coming back who may have had some struggles last season in better positions to thrive. Atlanta has Dean Pease, who is a very sound defensive coordinator, who did a heck of a job in Tennessee before he retired. He was also in New England. The Dallas brought in Dan Quinn, who has been known for being a much more effective defensive coordinator going back to his Seattle days than perhaps as being a head coach. And Carolina, which had some ups and downs, very young defense last year. I thought they played much better football late in the season. Now you're in year two with Phil Snow, who was making the transition to the NFL because he came over in Matt Rhule from the collegiate game. And now all of those rookies that he worked with last year are much more familiar and comfortable. So even the defenses that you could point to, hey, maybe this is a break, maybe this is an opportunity, I'll throw in Philadelphia too. You got a new defensive coordinator now. All four of those teams, I think, either are saying to themselves, hey, we've got the familiarity angle working our favor, or we've got somebody that's bringing in brand new ideas and concepts that can make our defense a little bit of a question mark and a guessing game for the opposition this year.
973-667-1960, 973-667-1960. Folks, let's get vaccinated. Go to covid19.nj.gov/vaccine to register. Limited Giants season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seat starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/tickets for more information. All right, let's go to the phones, Lance. 973-667-1960. Our first caller has been holding. You're on the line, and the caller is gone. So we'll open up the phones again. Folks, if you want to get in, please give us a call. It's 973-667-1960. Again, we only have one line, so if the phone is busy, keep trying. When the caller that's on previously hangs up, you will have a chance to get through. That's how we roll here. As we move forward here in Lance, of course, the schedule does get released tonight on NFL Network, Giants.com. We'll have a bunch of analysis, a bunch of stories on it, all that good stuff. How many primetime games do you think the Giants are going to land?
I would say they'll probably get about three, would be my estimation. I mean, we know we're going to get the Thursday game because every team plays a Thursday game.
And I think every team plays a Monday game now too, right?
Isn't I believe every team does play a Monday game. So I'll throw out, they'll probably throw maybe a Sunday nighter against Dallas, which in all likelihood will play out that way, or against maybe Philadelphia. And maybe there's an outside chance an additional Monday night game. So three would be the safe side. Maybe we'll see a push to four, only because the Giants are anticipating the return of Barkley, the addition of Kenny Golladay. Maybe that puts them over the hump, but I would lean more towards three.
I agree, and they might keep some open late in the year for flex scheduling purposes too, because if you look at this schedule, man, look at all the big markets on this schedule. You have, well, first of all, you have two really good teams that people will love to see in primetime in the Chiefs and the Bucks. Then you have big markets, L.A. and L.A., the Chargers and the Rams. You have the Bears, huge market in Chicago. Philly is obviously a huge market, and Dallas is always a candidate for primetime. So there are a lot of options here, Lance, for big market matchups. If both teams are good late in the year, that NBC would probably like to have on Sunday Night Football for flex scheduling purposes. So just something to keep in mind here moving forward. 973-667-1960. Caller, you're on the line. You lead us off today. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
How we doing? It's Bash from Ohio.
Bash, what's up, man?
How we doing, John? How we doing, Lance? I want to talk a little bit about this schedule coming out. Well, week one was leaked out as far as week one. I love the week one schedule as far as for the division-wise. I'm thinking the Giants may start the season off 1-0. The other may be 0-1 as far as you got the big game, Cowboys and Bucks. The opener on Thursday, we got the Eagles and Falcons. And Washington against the Chargers away in the Chargers. I think everybody has an away game except for the Giants having a home game against Denver. So I like our chances to see a low scoring game with two good defenses. We're not going to know sure as far as where the quarterback situation is in Denver with Luck and Bridgewater. So I like that matchup week one for the Giants. But the big thing we're looking at as far as the schedule I'm looking forward to looking for is when our bye week will be. And the three tough away games as far as KC, Tampa, and the Chargers, where does want to fall in as far as the beginning of the season, the middle or the back end at the end of the season as far as that? I want to get y'all taken on. And I'm hoping as far as our last week, because last week games is all division games, correct?
Yes.
Yes, that's usually how they structure it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm hoping that the last game is at Philly against them as far as that, hoping it's playoff implications as far as maybe knocking them out or just ruining their playoffs as far as. So I'm just hoping the Eagles game is an away game week 17. And the game that I'm circling on a schedule for myself is the Chicago game, which implicates as far as that first round pick we have in that third round. So that game might be an important game for us as far as we winning and making it, giving them more losses for this season or them beating us as far as having a better record. So that's just my take on the schedule and everything, and get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, Bash, look, the end of the year, you're always going to have probably at least three division games in the final month of the year, give or take. You know, the last five games will usually feature three division games, more or less, because they want to get those division games in late in the year when things are close and things are competitive. So we'll see which division opponent the Giants close with. It could be obviously Washington, Philly, or Dallas. We'll see. So that's interesting. I don't really have a preference as to when you face those really good teams on the road. I guess I'd rather have them spread out and not a bunch in a row. But that really doesn't bother me really, Lance, in terms of when you line those games up. Obviously, you want to have the Thursday night game spread out with some other games so you get a little bit more space in between. But other than that, nothing really jumps out to me in terms of when I would want those top opponents scheduled.
Well, and the other thing is, you look at who the other divisional foes are playing in week one. The Giants are going to have to play those opponents eventually.
Correct.
So, you know, it's not as if they get it easy in week one and then all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't catch up with them. Everybody's schedule is going to balance out within the division because, with the exception of those two rotating games based on where you finished the previous season, you're going to play the common opponents. So the Giants are eventually going to have to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Cowboys just happened to get them in week one. I really don't think it makes a difference when you play them. You're going to have to take care of business and capitalize no matter when the game is scheduled. Because you certainly don't go into the season, every team, and saying, well, let's hope we get him in week 15 so that by that time the quarterback's worn down and he's not going to play that game. That's no strategy in terms of having success in the upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you want to try to get KC in the last game of the year in case they're resting people or something like that. But, you know, again, that's not going to happen because the Giants are only going to play an intra-division game in that week. So, yeah. I agree. Bash, is anything that you really, besides that Philly game that you're keeping an eye on, that you really want to happen?
Like I said, as far as the Chicago game, I'm looking at the picks we have next year. And that'll be that L.A. game I'm looking into as far as the Rams game, the home game. I'm looking forward to that game as far as Stafford and Kenny G. Probably seeing each other, going up against each other. So I like the Rams matchup at home. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm hoping we just have a maybe middle bye week as far as maybe before week eight, or would it be better after week eight as far as the bye week?
Yeah, I always like bye week somewhere between like week 8 and 10. You know, I think that's kind of the sweet spot. You want to get it right in the middle of the year.
Yeah, balance to me is ideal. And plus, actually, the Giants, I would say, have been extremely beneficial
in the
bye department. The last few seasons have pretty much been between, I want to say, week 9 and 11 for the most part.
Last year, wasn't last year 12? I feel like last year's bye was very late.
Last year was week 11.
It was week 11, okay.
Yeah. I'm looking through the schedule because from what I remember, I feel like they've had an equidistant schedule for the last few seasons. I remember... You got to go back to, I think, the Coughlin era. Maybe the last time they had a bye in week 4. Week 11 for 2019 as well. Then in 2018, it was week 9.
What's the last week for bye weeks? 12? Is that the last week they actually do
bye? The only thing I could say is if it's an additional week, maybe they push it to 13 this year?
Yeah, maybe.
Tampa Bay had the latest bye last season. So let me look up when Tampa Bay's bye was. I can't remember if that was week 12 or week 13. But I know the Bucs, because if you remember, they didn't lose a game following the bye.
Oh, that's right.
After that loss to Kansas City. Then they went on that hot streak. Tampa Bay had a bye in week 13. So week 13, the latest bye. Do they push it to 14 this year because of the additional game? That I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question either. 973-667-1960. Don't miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giant games and world-class concerts in 2021 as a Giant suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available, or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. Back to the calls at 973-667-1960. Call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
CJ from the Bronx.
CJ, what do you got, man?
All right, one, we got to give Charlie some credit because it is not easy getting on these phone lines, man. How he does it every day, I don't understand.
CJ, look, I got to be honest with you. I wish I knew his trick because I would try to close that loophole, but I haven't been able to figure it out.
All right, I called because I just finished listening to Nagy's huddle.
Yeah.
It was a good interview. Thank you for that. So he said, give a lot of these quarterbacks a curve. And I understand what he means by everyone went through COVID, but we had, three, four coach changes last year. Most of them had better offenses than we had. I understand we're supposed to be patient, but it seemed like we wasted our training camp doing more things than we were doing, different stuff that we weren't supposed to do. I hope this year, with everyone talking about all these nice little gifts we have, all these talent we have, let's remember one thing. Let's do one thing great and work off of that. One thing great and work off of that. Because, you know, sooner or later, it's going to be a big tree, an oak tree, and it will work out.
Well, CJ, I think last year, CJ, they wanted to do one thing great, and that was run the ball at Saquon Barkley. Unfortunately, that didn't happen because he got hurt.
Yeah. But that one guy can't be a whole off. Well, it's Saquon. I could see why you could think that, but come on. He got injured. We're supposed to have a backup.
No, that's fair. Like, look, CJ, you're right. But the bottom line here, and Lance made this point earlier, you got to score more than 18 points per game. You got to get into that 23, 24 point area, score another touchdown per game, and that's going to what is realistically going to give you a chance to win this division.
Oh, I want to make sure I say this.
Yeah.
I don't watch college football live games. I usually keep a list of games that's winning the score. The last 3 years, I watched Louisiana football, Anyone that wants to complain about the O-line, Rob Sale's the man. He's going to make sure we're fine. He's going to make sure. He's one of those guys that will change his whole system in the middle of the game. That's the only reason why I feel a little different about this year. Jason Garrett, me and him had problems. I remember calling before this whole thing went down. It was hiring. But if everyone works together, we'll be fine. Rob Sale will handle it. He had two guys get drafted. And one was all-rookie last year. I think another one had plenty of time last year in his last two drafts. So I'm looking forward to this. Can't wait. But, yo, let's do one thing great. Make sure that we move the ball forward. Efficient offense before anything. If Dame gives me 27 touchdowns, nine interceptions, and our offense is top 16, top 10, that's a great year. All right, guys.
Thanks, CJ. Hey, look, if you can get this offense to top 10, that's a great year. But I think that's a good goal. You want to try to get this offense, I would say if you get it, Lance, under 20th, you want to get it into that middle third area. And if there's, and you know, that keep the defense in that, you know, top 12-ish area, I think then you have a team that can make a legitimate playoff run. I think that's what you're looking at. If the offense is sitting again in that bottom quartile, you know, between 25 and 32, you're going to have a problem and you're going to struggle to win games. So I think that's the goal. Get it into that middle third. Get it around 18-ish, you know, 16-ish middle of the league. I think this defense should be good enough where you're going to be able to win some games.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it more from just the statistical standpoint that, you know, you want to get into about 24 to 25 points a game that you're averaging. And remember, the scoring offense that the NFL keeps tally of also includes when your defense scores a touchdown. So I'm considering everything, special team scores, defensive touchdowns. You want to know at the end of the season that you're averaging in that 24 to 25 ballpark. So that's an additional touchdown. Hey, if that could get you into that 18th, 19th area in terms of the rankings, I would say that's a very good position, and it takes some pressure off of your defense. You just want more balance going into the season. You want to know that there's going to be games where, hey, if you're going to get into a shootout, you figure you can handle matching up with the opposition. And there's going to be games where maybe your offense is not clicking, but you're still putting up enough, you're manufacturing enough with field position that you're not making sure your defense goes out there. And if your defense holds the opposition to 17, you still lose the game because you're only able to get into the end zone twice for 14 points. So to me, it's just better balance, better symmetry within the team. There were games last year where the defense delivered, offense just, it was pulling teeth to scoring points. So that's why you got to get that number into that 24 to 25 ballpark consistently on average. And then I think you feel better about your chances of walking away with a win under various circumstances.
No, I'm with you.
You want to know that you can win games in different manners, not just one way.
And believe it or not, the 15th highest scoring team last year averaged 25.3 points per game. The 16th highest scoring team averaged 24.8 points per game. So, and then the 18th was exactly 24. So that's exactly the range we're talking about here, folks. If you can get to that zone and your defense is again in that, you know, 22 point area game, 21 points per game, something like that, you'll be in really good shape. That means you have a positive plus minus and you're probably going to win some football games. Back to the phones at 973-667-1960. Cole, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, John, Lance. It's Tim from Charleston, South Carolina again.
Tim, how are you, man?
You know, I'm looking at the schedule, and obviously the goal is winning the NFC. So looking at the schedule, I'm kind of looking at home and away. You know, obviously specific opponents, we don't know, like Lance said, we don't know how good they're going to be when we play them, or even for that matter, how good we're going to be when we play them. So we've got to take care of business at home. We got 8 home games, 9 road games. So I'm looking at those road games. We got some tough ones. Saying, you know, I mean, hoping for 5-4, but 4-5 might be realistic. Which means if we're going to come out with 10 or I mean, 10 I think puts us in competition definitely to win the East. And 11, I don't know if it's a pipe dream, but I think that settles it. But that means you've got to really take care of business at home and win like 6 out of the 8 games at home, which means we will have to do what we did last year, which is sweep our NFC East games at home and hold serve as much as we possibly can.
So now, I think, Tim, I think you make a good point very quickly, but before you get to your second point, that the home slate this year, I think, is actually much easier than the road slate, regardless of their home or road. You just look at the opponents, right? On the road, you have the Chiefs, the Bucks, the Saints, the Dolphins, you know, the Bears, those are all playoff teams last year, and good playoff teams for that matter. At home, you get, you know, the Falcons, the Panthers, top 10 picks, Broncos, top 10 picks. You know, so I think it is a little bit of an easier string at home, so you're right. I think if the Giants do want to make the playoffs this year, you got to try to win six of those, I'd say, at home and go 6-2, win at least two out of three against the division. Now, you know, it was great last year that the Giants went 4-2 in the division. It was fantastic. But, look, the division was historically bad last year, and, it, like, historically bad. So it's going to take better quality of play to go 4-2 in the division again this year, just based on the fact that I think the Giants' opponents are going to be better.
Well, and you also had another team in the division that went 4-2 in Washington, and it's no coincidence that they wound up winning the division. That's why you've got to win a minimum of four games to have a realistic shot of winning the division, and then the difference is, of course, how do you fare in some of those other games? And you look at actually the standings last year, Washington was 4-4 on the road, the Giants were 3-5. Both of those teams were 3-5 at home. So the difference was Washington won an additional road game over the Giants. So sometimes those little things are going to determine who wins the division and who falls short, but you've got to be able to say we are going to go minimum 4-2 within the division. If you don't get to that point, if you're hovering around 3-3, 2-4, then you just put so much more pressure on taking care of business outside of the conference or those other conference games. Because look at the division last year. I don't think this is surprising because everybody was below 500, but Washington, the Giants, and the Cowboys all went 5-7 in conference play. Philadelphia was 4-8. So, you know, all teams struggled within the conference. Nobody necessarily is going to boast that record. The biggest difference was Washington and the Giants went 4-2 in the division. So that's got to be the starting point because that at least gives you hope that you could stay in contention for the division crown.
Go ahead, Tim. You're still on.
Yeah, okay. So I agree with you guys 100% on all those points. My other point goes to the team itself, and we've all, since the draft and free agency, we talked a lot about, you know, putting more weapons around Daniel Jones. But I'm thinking about the defense. Our defense was showed some great signs last year, although not the consistency you necessarily want. But what I'm thinking is we finished up the year with maybe one of the top groups of safeties in the NFL.
Sure.
And the question was cornerback. And I think we added a lot of good talent at cornerback, albeit some of it young, but at least we have some depth there now. I think the edge rushers, that competition has got to produce some fruit. Sexy Dexy and Leonard Williams on the line, you know, just give us a stout line. And Blake Martinez is an animal up the middle. I'm really thinking the Giants can have, dare say, possibly, barring injuries, a dominant defense. And the two guys who I say we cannot afford to lose on defense to injury are Blake Martinez and, our cornerback.
Bradbury?
Bradbury, yeah. I knew it was
I would think about putting Leonard Williams in that mix, too, only because I think he's your best all-around defensive lineman. He's your best pass rusher. You could argue he's their best run stopper, too, since Dalvin's not here anymore. You can make that argument, right? So you lose him, you know, I feel like you have a little bit more depth there. You're right. If you lose Blake Martinez, I mean, it gets really shallow really fast at inside linebacker. So I agree that's a problem. You know, the Bradbury thing, I agree. You have Adoree Jackson there at least, but I don't think you have another guy that you really trust as an outside cornerback to step in. So I think you picked three pretty good guys, Lance, that would be very, very hard to replace if they lost them for any period of time.
Well, the other guy that I would throw in there is Logan Ryan, and it's not necessarily just productivity. It's about positioning guys in the right spot and just knowing this defense backwards, upside down, you name it. No matter how you spin it, he feels comfortable wherever he's placed. I think that's an extremely valuable player, which doesn't always show up in the box score. So
yeah.
I may even put him at the top of the list as the guy that the Giants can't afford to lose because I think everybody else feeds off of what he does within that defense and the fact that Patrick Graham feels comfortable about, hey, if I need to move him close to the line, we can move him close to the line. If I got to play him back, we can play him back. So Ryan, to me, I think is the most valuable piece. As far as just the overall outlook of the defense, Remember, there's a few things to me that you're banking on that you still don't know. Is Leonard Williams going to have another double-digit sack season? He's never done it back-to-back years.
And Lance, by the way, not just has he never done it back-to-back years, since 2016, no other defensive tackle in all of football not named Aaron Donald has done it for two straight years. So I think assuming double-digit sacks for him is probably assuming a little bit too much.
Well, so that's something that you still need to at least hold out there as a question mark. You can't just duplicate production yep. automatically and say, hey, we're carrying over, and that's the starting point. Plus, he also had 15 and a half tackles for loss. And you lost, by the way, with Dalvin Tomlinson, the guy that was third on your team in that department with 9.5 tackles for loss and a very good run stopper. So does Dexter Lawrence help make up for Dalvin's loss? Does a guy like Danny Shelton make up for Dalvin Tomlinson's loss? The run-stopping ability for Dalvin and the sack production of Leonard Williams are two things we can't guarantee for this coming season. That changes the dynamics of this defense. I think you feel good about the secondary from a depth perspective. You feel good about the guys who played last season. They're comfortable. But what's going on up front is a little bit of a wild card to me as to how this defense can pick up where automatically it left off last
year. Well, and we just don't know, quite frankly, who the defensive ends are going to be, who the edge rushers are going to be, right? I mean, we just, I say defensive ends when they're in the, you know, even man front and sub package. And
pass rushers,
you know, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, thank you. The guys rushing off of the edge. Sure. You don't know who those guys are going to be. You know, how is Lorenzo Carter coming off an Achilles injury? You know, with an Achilles injury, Lance, that takes away explosive ability sometimes when you're trying to push off that leg. You know, I'm trying to remember. Do you remember which, if it was right or left Achilles? Do you remember
I'd
that?
Have to look that up. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure which one it was.
That might, you remember, I remember, the only reason I think about this, because when Kevin Durant tore his Achilles, right, I read a couple interesting articles about how since it was his right Achilles, it wasn't as major. Because as you know, Lance, when you're a right-handed basketball player, what leg do you explode off of when you're going to the rim to jump and stuff like that? You're usually exploding off of your left leg, right?
Sure.
Because you're going up with your right hand, you're jumping off your left leg. So they thought his recovery from the Achilles wouldn't, you know, be as debilitating long-term because it was his right foot, not his left foot. So I wonder, based on which leg it was for Carter, and we'll see if we can find that, they might have to either line him up on the right or left side, right? So he can still maybe explode off of his good foot and not his bad one. Again, this is just stuff that I've been kind of spitballing a little bit. So how good is Lorenzo Carter going to be right away? How is Oshin Zimenez going to be in his third year coming off shoulder surgery? We don't know the answer to that. Ofedi Odenigbo, is he a guy that they want to play inside more? That's something Dave Gettleman talked about after they signed him. How much is he going to be an outside guy on passing downs versus rushing downs? You know, Ryan Anderson, another free agent addition. Where does he fit in? How quickly is Azeez Ojulari going to be able to force his way onto the field? We just don't know who these guys are. My guess, and throw Carter Coughlin and Cam Brown into the mix. We don't, Devontae Downs. I feel like, Lance, that Patrick Graham and Joe Judge are really going to rotate those guys based on opponent situation, what you're asking them to do down in distance. So until we get a feel for that and how those players are going to perform in those roles, it is a bit of a wild card. You know, how is that group going to do? I don't think anyone in any realistic way can tell you how that's going to go.
Well, and that's why I think it's a little bit of a wild card saying, okay, if Leonard Williams doesn't give you the double-digit sacks, just give you an idea, the Giants had 40 sacks last season, and Leonard Williams accounted for just over a quarter of them with 11.5. If you look at the breakdown of everybody else on the team, and granted there were some injuries such as Lorenzo Carter, but the highest total for the second guy on the team in terms of sacks was 4, okay?
Yeah.
That was the second highest total, John. That was Kyler Fackrell and Dexter Lawrence. There is a sizable gap between 4 and 11.5. So that means that if the top guy drops in terms of his sack production and you have piecemeal across the rest of the board, which is guys are rotating in and out, everybody's going to hover around 5, or at least you hope, right, that you get that type of spreading the wealth mentality, you need to account for it, and that's going to bring down a drop in overall team production. And I'm not even, by the way, taking into consideration the tackles for loss. I'm just looking at the sacks here. The tackles for loss were also spread all across the board. And Dalvin, who I mentioned was third on your team, is no longer in the equation. So that, to me, creates a little bit of the unknown given the usage of personnel last season. You've got guys coming back from injury, and then you have players that were not asked to play as many snaps as Leonard Williams. Are you going to put a guy on the field much more than he played last season? Perhaps, but I think if you were to ask me, I think Patrick Graham is going to continue to rotate. So outside of a guy like Leonard Williams, it's hard to say that there's going to be somebody else of the edge rusher group, the pass rushing group, that's going to play 90-some-odd percent of the snaps, which means you're banking on Leonard doing a lot of the heavy lifting again, and you're banking on the rest of the productivity pretty much being balanced across the board, which, once again, comes with question marks.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, you look at the defensive tackles last year, you know, other, you know, Aaron Donald at 13.5 sacks, Stephon Tuitt, who's kind of a 3-4 defensive end for Pittsburgh, but similar player, he had 11. DeForest Buckner at 10, and Leonard Williams at 11.5. The next highest defensive tackle at 7.5. So if Leonard Williams dropped to 7.5 sacks this year, Lance, that wouldn't shock me. Would that blow you away, shock you?
No, I wouldn't be stunned by that at all.
No, exactly. So then you have to figure out where those rest of the sacks are coming from. And, you know, you have a lot of young players, a lot of guys that they're trying to develop, and you hope you can figure that out. And if you can play a lot more man-to-man defense in the back end, Lance, adding Adoree Jackson, Aaron Robinson, Darnay Holmes in his second year, Bradbury's back, then you can blitz a lot more too. So maybe Jabril Peppers gets a bunch of sacks. Maybe Blake Martinez, blitzing up the middle, gets more sacks. That's another thing to keep in mind. Can they blitz more if they play more man-to-man because they trust their guys to cover down the field a little bit better? All things that we have to consider going forward. 973-667-1960. Cole, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
What's going on, guys? This is Sean from Maryland. How are you?
Sean, what's up, man?
First, I want to say I appreciate you guys' coverage and everything like that. You guys made us pretty happy Giants fans.
Thank you for listening, Sean. Appreciate it.
What I want to talk about is the defense. As far as the defense goes, I feel like with the entire team, our secondary is the strongest unit on the team. Of course, I understand it's a team sport, but our secondary is just outstanding. And I think because our secondary has been able to cover so well, that's what really caused Leonard Williams to have such a successful sack numbers last year, because the quarterback couldn't throw it to anybody. So it was like, all right, Leonard Williams has his pass rush. He's going to make the sacks.
I think that's so, part of it. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So with that being said, I mean, I know we just talked about the draft and everything, and I understand that's new, but I also want to talk about last year's draft. And I really want to shine some light on Darnay Holmes, who I think had an amazing rookie season. And when I'm watching the game, sometimes I will forget that he's a rookie because he's playing so well. And when you don't hear his name as a cornerback, I think that's a great thing. And I think he had an outstanding season. And I don't think he gets enough praise for that.
Well, yeah, Sean, look, I think you're right. And I think you're looking at Darnay Holmes and you're looking at Xavier McKinney, who's almost like a bonus addition to this draft class, right? And I think how they use those two combined with Aaron Robinson this year, you know, Robinson and Darnay Holmes are both slot cornerbacks, nickel cornerbacks, but I think they play the position two very different ways. So it'll be interesting how they use that. And then McKinney, are they using him in the slot? Are they using him as a deep safety, which is where I think he's going to be most of the time. He'll kind of be their center fielder. You throw all that into the mix combined with veterans you should be able to rely on, and James Bradbury, Adoree Jackson, Jabril Peppers, Logan Ryan. You're right. That is a heck of a unit.
Yeah, and I'm going to make a bold prediction right quick, and I may throw some people off. But because Leonard Williams, he's our top sack guy, he's the most notable player on defense, so on and so forth, he's going to get double-teamed. And I think if Aziz gets enough playing time, my bold prediction is Aziz is going to have either more forced fumbles or sacks than Leonard Williams will have this year. And you can let the defensive line and all them know that I said that so they can have a competition like we used to have with our D-line back in the day.
You said more forced fumbles or sacks or and sacks?
And or sacks.
And or. Okay, so either or. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. I have it written it down. I got you down, Sean.
Well, remember, Kyler Fackrell, who we were discussing earlier, he's no longer on the team. And he's somebody that had 4 sacks, 8.5 tackles for loss, and had a few disruptive plays, deflections as well as INTs.
Do you have forced fumbles for him, Lance?
He had one forced fumble
okay.
That he was credited with. Yeah. So somebody's got to make up for his productivity, which came in flashes, but there were a number of game-changing plays that he helped produce. So if a guy like Ojulari could get on the field, and even if it's in pass-rushing situations, Yeah, if he could take advantage of that, we saw what he did at Georgia. He was a disruptive player. I don't think it's crazy to think that maybe he could lead the way in forced fumbles.
Was that
in terms of sacks? I think a lot of it is going to depend on his snap count.
Oh, 100%.
For the sacks.
Was that the Washington game where Fackrell had the big strip at the end of the game to help win that game?
I believe so. I think that that was the game. Or if I'm correct, wasn't he the one that forced it that Tate Crowder then ran it back for a touchdown?
Yeah, correct. 100%. Yeah. I think that was Washington,
It was
right?
Fackrell forced it and Crowder returned the first score. Yeah.
No, look, Lance, you're 100% right. And forced fumbles, it's always easier for the edge guys to get forced fumbles. And the reason is very simple. The quarterback doesn't see him coming a lot of the times. Quarterbacks always see Leonard Williams coming, but obviously he's right in their face. You know, he's not rushing off the edge usually. So I like the forced fumbles prediction. I think that is a better idea. But I think the Ojulari snap thing is interesting. You know, how are they going? And by the way, we haven't mentioned Ellison Smith either in terms of being a potential pass rusher either. But how quickly is he going to get on the field? How are they going to use him? Because he was a good two-way player at Georgia, right? So I don't think he's a guy that you automatically say, all right, third down, designated pass rusher, go get it. I think you can play him on early downs. He showed the ability to stop the run. So I think it will be interesting how quickly he's able to earn a sizable role. I would not be surprised if he earns a starting job in week one. I don't think it's guaranteed by any means, but I think there's a coin flip shot that he's one of the two starting edge rushers in week one.
Yeah, I think a lot also depends on how Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez look once they consistently get on the field in training camp. The other thing that I think is interesting, if you just look at Patrick Graham's defense, and this is also a product of the versatility of the secondary, they had 14 forced fumbles last season as a team, and the bulk of those forced fumbles actually came from the secondary, believe it or not. John, you had Logan Ryan had 3. You had Jabril Peppers had 1. James Bradbury had 2. Yadam had 1. Fackrell only had 1, as I mentioned, and Blake Martinez had 2. So a good portion of those forced fumbles were a result of the secondary, which is another example of how some games Patrick Graham's going to give those guys the green light to come up at the line of scrimmage and go after the quarterback, which we saw, whether it be Logan, whether it be Jabril Peppers. So that's a way that you can make up for maybe what you lack up front if the guys are not getting the job done. But remember, it's a cat and mouse type of game where sometimes you're a little too over-aggressive in that department, it can come back to bite you. So you got to pick and choose your moments when you want to give the green light to those secondary members.
You know, I bet a lot of those forced fumbles, if I remember, I think they came on receivers too, because one thing the Giants coaches coached, Lance, was that when these receivers have the ball, they're not used to handling the ball a lot, right? These aren't running backs. These aren't quarterbacks that have the ball in their hands every play. So attack the ball. Go in there and try to strip it away. And I think a lot of those forced fumbles came in the secondary too, which is a credit to them for closing fast in those zones and attacking the football once some of those catches were made.
Yeah, punching it out from behind, which is, to me, a really good technique. Actually, the Chicago Bears secondary was well known for that. Charles Peanut Tillman is probably the guy that's at the top of the list. If you go back and you watch film on him, he was fantastic. He may give up a catch, and then he would immediately punch it out. So, I mean, if you're a young player, I'd go watch what Charles Peanut Tillman did. He was a master in that department. It seemed as if the Giants were focusing on that, especially the guys on the back end. I remember we keep bringing up the Washington game, and this was the game in D.C. So I think this was the second meeting. If you remember early in that game, I think it was a special teams play. Or maybe it was, no, it was an offensive possession for Washington. May have been a dump off to Antonio Gibson. He runs off the left flat up the sideline, and then it became a hot potato.
Where
at least 5 or 6 guys touched it before I believe the Giants recovered. It was one of those crazy plays, and it was a result of somebody on the Giants defense knocking the ball out from Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, I think it actually was from behind, too, if I remember right. I think that might have been Peppers that got that one out. I don't remember. But, yes, I absolutely remember the play. No question. 973-667-1960. Back to the phones. Cole, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
John, Marty from Anahorkin.
How are you? How are you, pal?
Good. I checked on that, and actually what I read was that Lorenzo Carter ruptured his left Achilles.
Left Achilles. So my guess is that, based on how you rush, you would be pushing off your left Achilles if you're lined up against the left tackle, I think. I'd have to look at some video to confirm that, so maybe they'd have to move to the other side. Thank you for that, Marty. I appreciate that.
Yeah, because I also think LT, I think that was the injury he had when he got knocked out those last few games of the season. when he ruptured his Achilles. I think it was the same type of injury. But we do know how LT used to heal pretty quick. So
well, he was a very unique individual compared to everybody else.
The rules, normal rules usually did not apply to Lawrence Taylor.
Exactly.
And I just look it up. Taylor ruptured his right Achilles as opposed to Lorenzo Carter.
Yeah.
Okay, it was his right. Okay, good. So, let's hope, Lorenzo can get back on the field and make a difference this year.
Yeah, look, and he was. And here's the thing about Lorenzo Carter. He's a really good edge defender. He's not, I don't think, a great pure pass rusher yet. He was making progress last year, but before he got hurt last season, I thought he was playing the position extremely well, and I think it was pretty obvious that the Giants coaching staff thought he was too, because he was playing like 90% of the snaps at that position before he got hurt. He was on the field all the time. So the Giants coaches certainly liked what they were getting out of him when he was out there.
Yeah, definitely. Other than that, the only thing I'm looking forward to is the weekend, just to hear what's going on the field with some of these guys they're bringing in. It'd be good to hear some players' information finally for a change.
Yeah, look, we'll be there. Dan Salamone and I will be there for rookie minicamp on Friday and Saturday. What that's going to look like, Marty, I have no idea. Where I'm going to be allowed to go and have access to, I have no idea. Will they even be doing, you know, anything besides, you know, walk-through installs at practice? I don't know. Will they be doing anything with any sort of speed or tempo? I don't know. So stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll cover it. What it's exactly going to be and who's going to be there, I don't have that answer for you.
Yeah. All right, good. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Marty. Good stuff. 973-667-1960. And Lance, I'm desperate to see these guys on the field in person, but like I said, I just don't know what rookie minicamp is going to look like.
Yeah, because, I mean, every team really is fluctuating when they're having rookie minicamp, number one, and, you know, with the whole union and whether or not guys are going to show up, that's another issue. So, to me, it's a big wild card, a big question mark in terms of the status. And remember, and I can't emphasize this enough, whether it's OTAs, rookie minicamp, when was the last time that we got to week 6 or week 7 and you resorted back to, boy, I remember this guy was shining in a practice with no contact in the middle of May?
Paul Dottino says it all the
time. Well, he may say it, but you know what? He doesn't necessarily live in reality all the time. So, okay, you could take that for what it's worth. So I get it. We're all yearning for information and intel, but at the end of the day, there's only so much that's going to be an indication of what's going to happen in the regular season.
Yeah, and just a reminder, too, for rookie minicamp, usually teams bring in like 30 to 40 tryout guys. So you have, you know,
because they need the bodies, John. That's
correct.
Another reason why.
You basically have first, second, and third teams, you know, at practice like you would a regular NFL practice. So it's probably more like 50 tryout guys. It's a lot of tryout guys. And then you have your undrafted free agents. You have your draft picks. So you're not going to have those numbers. So practice, even if these guys are all there, is just going or going is going to look very different. It's just the way it's going to be. So whatever it is, we'll have coverage for it on Giants.com.
I'll give you another quick example, John, just to sell further my point about why there's only so much you can take away. If you remember 2019 rookie minicamp, Daniel Jones is working with Darius Slayton, and Slayton can't catch anything in that rookie camp,
right?
He
dropped everything, yeah.
Exactly. Daniel tells the story. Darius tells the story. So if you were watching him and you were trying to get a read on, okay, what the Giants draft class is going to look like, you're probably saying to yourself, oh, my God, what exactly was the team thinking? This guy is horrendous. He's horrible. How did he catch everything at Auburn and then can't catch anything when there's not even a defender in the vicinity? And then you see Darius Slayton had a very good rookie season. So my point is, I get it. We're all itching, yearning for information, but there's only so much you can put behind it. That's
all right, final call of the show, absolutely, 100%. Cole, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Scott from New Mexico.
Scotty!
Quick question. You were mentioning guys that would adversely impact the Giants if they got hurt. And I didn't hear you mention anybody on the offensive line. What if Nick Gates or
Andrew
Thomas?
Oh, well, no, Scott, the only reason we didn't mention that is the caller called up about the defense. So I just wasn't even considering the offensive side of the ball. But, yeah, look, I mean, the good thing is that they do have Solder now as that backup tackle, so you do have a backup there. But, yeah, I think Nick Gates would be an injury you wouldn't like to see.
Right.
And then at guard, too, yeah. And of course, Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley would be 1 and 2 on that
of
list
course.
As well.
One quick question, and obviously you're short on time. Now that you know the schedule, and you're going to be starting, obviously, minicamp, and then, you know, or rookie minicamp, and then obviously you'll be starting to chart the teams that you're going to play. And each team presents its own problems, especially a team like Atlanta that'll have Kyle Pitts and Julio Jones, are both big receivers, et cetera. So that impacts teams greatly.
Not to mention Calvin Ridley, who's pretty good too,
right,
by the way.
I forgot, right. He's on the team as well.
Yeah, they got a hell of an offense.
Correct. So I always look at each team as an individual. This is the week we're going to have to play this team, and they present different problems and so forth. So I don't believe in, you know, whatever the schedule is, the schedule is, and you're going to have to adjust your team to that particular team that you're playing. But my final question, which I'll take off the air, chemistry is really important, especially with wide receivers. You just mentioned the point with Darius Slayton and Daniel Jones, and he had the best chemistry, actually, as they went through the season. But as you're looking at the new players that are coming on the roster, and since offense, as both you and Lance mentioned, is extremely important, you have to get beyond that, you know, 15 to 18 point scoring average. How important is chemistry with the new players coming in, and how long do you think that process is going to take? Because I sort of discount preseason games because you don't get a lot of players, you know, playing a long period of time. So I was wondering if that process really starts right away, and how soon do you think Daniel Jones, with the new players coming in, can develop the chemistry that's necessary to fit, you know, the different teams that they're going to play as the season progresses? And I'll take it off the air, guys.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the call. I would say two things about the chemistry, Lance, before we wrap up here. One, as much as people are hemming and hawing about not adding somebody to the offensive line, and I understand those issues, the good news is that you have all the same guys back, so there should be some pretty good chemistry on the offensive line, you know, aside from Nate Solder because of the opt-out. But the rest of the guys have all played with each other, so that's good. You know, there shouldn't be any continuity issues there, which is awesome, okay? Two, the wide receiver position, Shepard's back, Ingram's back, Slayton's back. So, yeah, guys like Kyle Rudolph and Kadarius Toney, yes. I think it'll be very important for Daniel Jones to develop trust in Kenny Galladay. And I say that because he's not a guy, Lance, that's going to create like 2 feet of separation and he's wide open, you throw him the ball. Daniel Jones will have to trust him that, look, the corner's kind of right on him, but he's so big it means he's open anyway, and he's going to have to throw the ball into coverage. But Kenny Galladay, the way he makes plays in coverage. That's the type of balls that he catches because he's so good on contested catches. He's bigger than other guys and all that stuff. So I think it'll be very important for him to develop that trust. The good thing this year, unlike last season, Lance, we have 3 preseason games, okay? So there's going to be on-the-field opportunities in addition to whatever else happens in camp, whether it's scrimmages or, you know, scrimmaging against other teams for camp, whatever you end up doing, if that's allowed this year, where it's going to allow them to build more chemistry than what I think we saw last offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a huge benefit, especially just for the young guys in general, to get a taste of the NFL speed before all of a sudden they get set for playing for real when it counts in the regular season. I think also keep in mind there's a lot of group settings where these guys get together outside of the facility and try to get on the same page with one another. So, you know, I think that'll help Daniel Jones. But, you know, the nucleus is back for the most part. They're not learning a new offense for the second straight season, which has been a trend. So I think that's a positive, meaning Daniel Jones can maybe focus this offseason on getting on the same page with the guys that he hasn't had previous work with, as opposed to being overwhelmed by most of the guys that he has worked with, whether they've been consistently in and out of the lineup, or at least they have a better feel for the offense. So that, I think, at least is a positive. The one point that I wanted to throw out, though, about the offensive line, remember, you do have a new offensive line coach.
Yeah, good point.
Who could be teaching things a little bit differently than the voices you heard last year. So that's something that we need to account for. And I think for the sake of Andrew Thomas, remember, he played next to Will Hernandez for the first half of the season, then he played next to Shane Lemieux for the second half of the season. So the good news is he's had some experience next to both, but I think for his well-being, you want to be able to then say, hey, this is the guy we anticipate you're going to be next to, so this way you know his tendencies inside, outside. That, I think, could help his development.
I agree.
Which I wouldn't overlook.
No, I'm with you. All right, Lance, check it out. Schedule release coming out tonight. Giants.com will have it. It'll, of course, also be on NFL Network. We'll react tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live with Dottino and Feagles. Then we'll have Dan Salamone come in with some questions for Lance, Paul, and I on Friday's show. Lance, good stuff, my friend.
Absolutely, you got it.
We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Enjoy the schedule release tonight.